Coming up next from the grassy knoll, a terrifying look into the Orwellian world of brainwashing, disinformation, and ultimately control over
you.
The suitcase was getting very heavy, so I rested on a grassy knoll and took a peek inside. As I opened it, out burst a fountain of many coloured butterflies, rainbow game counters, chess pieces, laughing cutlery, tiny chairs and tables, and flying plates covered with exotic fruit.
Welcome back to another segment of the grassy knoll, and I've asked to sit in with me here in the studio, and that's in the quotation marks, and that is the Visikeet. I figured you should see the operation before it's over with. Anyway, if you hear something tropical and bird-like, it's him. Who we have with us today is the I-Man, the informer's back, and he sent an email out that knocked my eyeballs out, and the response I got from I-Man was almost something kind of like bemused, like, well, what's the big deal? And I'm like, what? So let me ask you this. You have been, shall we say, opted out of the IRS system, right?
Right.
All right. Now, did I get this correctly, that the way you went about it was to, I don't know if this is the right usage of words, petition the Vatican?
Yeah. It was actually an administrative complaint. And what it was, the beginning of that was a demand that I told the IRS, you know, they can do this, they can do that, I can do this, I can do that, and they can't do this. And they actually stipulated to it, because I just sent it to the chief counsel of IRS, because if you send it to any other lackey in there, they can't do anything legally. The only one that can legally do anything for the IRS and commit the IRS is the chief counsel. Well, attorneys, you know, they rule the world, so
right.
That's who I sent it to. Anyway, I got it back from the National Accounts Director that I was no longer a taxpayer. I didn't have to appear in court. I didn't have all these things I didn't have to do, and they were very sorry. So, but when I got my IMF after that letter, naturally, all the codes and everything was there except dollar amount. Well, I didn't like that, so I then wrote an administrative complaint, about 30 pages, and I put like 27, 28 facts in the beginning, and then I elaborated on each fact and put them where they, you know, where they belong. And I sent it to the Vatican. I sent it to Attorney General of Great Britain, Lyle.
Now, what's his connection, if he's an attorney general of Great Britain, what's his connection to the Vatican?
He's an attorney, isn't he?
Yeah.
He belongs to the Templars.
Okay.
Templar. The Knights Templar was through the Vatican and the Exchequer, which was a separate money thing, the City of London.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, the Bank of England.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sent it to the Secretary of Treasury of the Federal Reserve, not the United States. And then I sent it to the Governor of the International Monetary Fund. And I sent it to the Alien Property Custodian, which is naturally the Attorney General of the United States. And, of course, the secretary of the IMF, the governor, his, at the time, was Robert Rubin. then in about 30 days, I got, well, within 30 days, something like 16, 17 days, I got a letter from the Holy See of Antioch. I got two letters and one phone call from the British Consulate of England, Great Britain. And I says, okay, something's up. So I got another IMF.
What is an IMF, by the way?
That's the individual master file. That is what the IRS has on everybody. And it tells you what status you are, what they're doing. You can get an IMF complete, and in there is a tax mod A. T-A-X-M-O-D-A, all in capital letters. And that gives them an update within 30 days of what they're doing to you. It's all in code, and you got to decipher it. And, you know, to get all the books to decipher everything and the manuals is selling like $3,000. You know, the average guy ain't got the $3,000. So I let Pat Lynch do that because he's one of the expert, if not the expert, in deciphering all the codes because he puts it down in layman's terms what they're doing. I can do it. I've got some of the books. I don't have them all. And what might take me a day and a half would take Pat probably 2 hours. You know, I'm just slow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got to... He does this for a living. And but he doesn't write anything about law. And so he doesn't know the law part or the history part.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows the IMF. So... I wrote for it, and it came back, and there was absolutely nothing on it. It was one sheet of paper for every year going back to 1983, and up at the top, it had the IRS and who the person was and all the code numbers in there for them, and then it had one sentence, no tax mod A on MF. I got 13 pages like that. So that means that they wiped all the codes out and everything. And then what it amounted to is I didn't exist because I got a letter, a cover letter coming back from the IRS saying that I couldn't use the Social Security number as an identifier because it's invalid and do not use it.
All right, so you had an SS, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so what this also did was basically expunge your Social Security involvement.
That was for IRS because I get Social Security disability.
Okay.
And it's two different animals there because, in fact, you never see the IRS going after anybody in court for not paying his Social Security taxes, do you?
Not that I know of, no.
No. They can't because that's not their forte. They weren't given directions to do that. They're there to exist to collect two things. One is a United States tax on income, which is just ATF, and the other is their income for the private Federal Reserve, and that's where the 1040 comes in. It's nothing to do with the income tax for the ATF. For the government.
Okay.
And so that's all I cc'd it to a lot of other people in the government, but they're the main ones that I went after because they run the country, and you know, the president and everybody else's Congress is nothing but shills for this
mm-hmm.
front, you know, for this outfit.
But am I to understand then what took place I guess over in Europe was that either the Vatican or the Vatican's extension, which would be the Attorney General of the United Kingdom, did they basically tell the IRS and stuff, this is the way it's going to be?
Yeah, there. If you look at the structure of, like, in the Mafia, okay, I'll just take them for an example.
And for good reason.
Yeah, because actually they are the mafia. They're the head mafia, the Vatican and the governments, the Bank of England and that. But what they do is you always see on TV, oh, well, we got to find this kingpin mafia member and his holdings and stuff like that, and they can't find it because what they do is they're buried five or six corporations deep. In other words, they set up a front, and they operate that front, and then that front sets up another front, and it keeps on going all the way back, so it's very hard to find them. Just like the same way that the prison industries, most all judges have stock in prison industries, but you can't find them because right. they hide under aliases and different names because... You got to remember, that's a conflict of interest because they're the ones that sentence the people to jail, and the more people they sentence to jail, the higher their stock goes.
Yeah, well, we looked at them that function as employer recruiters.
Yeah.
And by the way, isn't that prison whole scam there? Is that not legalized indentured servitude or slavery?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. And they know that.
Sure. I know they veil it very thinly on that website where you can go see their product catalog.
Uh-huh.
But if it smells like it and it looks like it, guess what, folks? It is.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So that's how I got it. And after that, I had no problem. And then in the year 2000, this goes back to 1998. Then in the year 2000, they sent IRS sent to everybody in the country. A letter explaining about all these scams and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So being that I got that letter, I immediately the act request for the IMF. And I got practically the same letter back stating that they were sorry that they had put this to me because one of the stipulations they made was they could never contact me unless I contacted them. And that was in 98, and they weren't living up to it from what I thought. So they had just sent it carte blanche to everybody's name on there, whether they were a taxpayer or not. So since then, I got an apology letter, but since then, nothing.
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I did because a member in the family, I'll just say, received some money from a death in a will and stuff like that, and I wanted to find out anything, and... I contacted them for that person's IMF. Yeah, I'm just saying person, and because we're not talking legal terms right now.
Right.
And it says that they had nothing on that person, and there was no IMF, nothing. It was absolutely like mine.
Mm-hmm.
So that was over and done, and I didn't ask any more questions or nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, let me go back. Here's something that a lot of people don't take into consideration. When I got the letter from the National Accounts Director, it opened up with Dear Taxpayer. Well, I knew what to do. The average person would say, okay. Anyway, I wrote back and complained and told them don't ever to use a salutation of Dear Taxpayer. If you do, it is your authorization to mm-hmm. be called a taxpayer from that point on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't object. That's one of the things in the Uniform Commercial or any contract that you file or do is to object to anything. And that's why a tacit procuration works so well, because most judges don't even know what a tacit procuration is. I did two of them on the Attorney General and the Governor of North Carolina, and I gave them all the avenues I needed. They were both attorneys. They knew. They're high up. And they defaulted to it, and I had them on file in the local county recorder's office in a default book that they defaulted and agreed to everything that was in the tacit proclamation that I did. So just to let people know, if they call you a dear taxpayer or anything relating to a taxpayer, you've got to vehemently object right on the spot.
All right, so that...
Don't wait for 2 weeks or something to send a letter to them. Just do it immediately.
All right, so this is a trap that they use.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, when you send correspondences, what kind of mail do you send them through or by?
I just send it regular U.S. Post Office.
You don't send it registered or anything?
I used to, but they play games, and I have had certified mail come and never got a green card back or anything like that, and they checked it, the Post Office, and they had no record of it. Okay? And I used to send it registered and go all through that and return receipt requested and all this garbage. And I did get letters back from them saying that they had gotten that mail, but yet the post office couldn't find it. Now, it happens regularly because I got delivery confirmation when I send books out or anything like that, just to make sure the person gets it. Lately, I've had three or four times where I've actually gone back to the post office and got a refund for that on the mail and the delivery confirmation because they lost it. And when I went online to check it and trace it, you know, their tracking, wasn't there. And even I sent one to Florida and one to California and one to New York in Brooklyn. And all three, if I ever had to go to court, I had no proof that they got the books. But yet the post office did checks on it and everything, and they couldn't find it. But the people, one of the persons I wrote a letter to and asked him, had he gotten the books? And he had gotten the books like 4 days after I had mailed them. And he asked me why, and I said, because I had no record of it. I didn't tell him that the post office, you know, whoever it was, didn't scan it, didn't go through at the end post office, I imagine. And so, therefore, there was no record of it, and they would say, well, we had no record of it being received by this man. So, but the one fellow did, and the other two fellows never emailed me back or wrote to me, and so they got the books. But there's just why I stopped sending anything. If you really wanted to get it, you'd register it or insure it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to because they're liable. If you send a Privacy Act request and you wanted to insure it, go ahead. It costs like $3 or something, or $4 or whatever. But and you put a dollar figure on it, you know, and the post office would have to pay that.
Yeah, that's an inducement not to screw with it, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, I've had some very bizarre episodes, and you realize just how little recourse you can have with the post office.
Exactly.
And when people talk about, you know, Brave New World or New World Order issues, if you ever get into it with the USPS, believe me, you know, something that you obviously get involved with every day can turn very nasty and things disappear, as I found I had stuff happen myself.
Well, the local post office here was real good. The postmaster is a woman, and she suggested getting my money back. But then one time what they did, she wasn't answering anything, but she says, for me to call the post office. I says, well, wait a minute. You can call Florida. I don't know what post office it is. I went through the machinations of doing everything like she said, and I found it. And then I said, well, okay, I didn't tell her I did it. I said, why should I go through? I paid for a service.
Right.
And I expected it, and you should be be the one who's going to the post office.
Right.
Don't cost you a dime. It cost me postage, and it cost me a telephone call, a long-distance telephone call down there to them. And they're not going to know anything because they've already said it didn't get to their post office. So how are they going to? Finally, when I got done talking to them, she agreed with me, and then I had contacted the headquarters in Washington D.C. and dealt with them, and just the way that you word it to them and know what you're doing. I got excellent results from them. They said, well, go to your local post office and get a refund. So that's what I've been doing for the past three times.
Okay.
And one of them was $7 and change, and a couple of them was $3 and change or $4 and change. But I figured, well, hey, I'll just go back, and if they got to keep coughing it back to me, I mean nothing, but if everybody did that, you know, they would be in a hurt world of hurt.
All right, now I obviously digress because of the, you know.
Oh, that's okay. We were talking about the Vatican. Yeah, so that's when I sent it to the Vatican, I had to send it. You can't send it registered or anything like that. It's an international thing that you send to them. And it was in a red card, and a red form, and I got the that it was delivered to them through international mail.
Mm-hmm. This is where I'm going next, unless you want to fill in. But here's what we haven't stated, and you have implicitly, but explicitly, the Vatican being able to effect such a action.
Yeah.
Upon the United States, or
uh-huh.
All right, what in the world can you infer or determine, if, like I said, explicitly about the relationship of the Vatican to the United States and its citizenry? And here again, there's probably a B-side question to this to ask you when you disappeared, which of you disappeared? But first, let me ask you that: what does that tell us about what the Vatican is to not only this nation but others?
Well, it goes back to the tenets of the Church, which the Vatican is. You know, of course, he's supposedly the vicar of Christ.
Right.
And Webster blasts him in his 1828 dictionary and says he's pretending to be,
right. Of course.
And he never was. But going back to the old time, when King John sent the word that he wasn't going to accept Stephen Langton as the church's head man over there in England, that's when King John surrendered to the Pope. And when the barons got a hold of that, and then they held a king at knife point, King John, and made him sign the Magna Carta, that's when the Pope Innocent III declared the Magna Carta to be, and I'm going to quote this from his words, unlawful and unjust, as it is base and shameful, whereby the Apostolic See is brought into contempt, the royal prerogative diminished, the English outraged, and the whole enterprise of the crusade greatly imperiled. Now, it was on that grounds that the king had, was compelled to enter by force and fear. And like I had said before, that if someone holds a gun to your head and says, here, sign this confession,
mm-hmm.
that's under threat, duress, and you would use the same thing. TDC.
All right, so with that said, what you just read stated that they looked at the Magna Carta as basically flying in the face of the Apostolic See and his right to rule.
Right.
Okay.
Now, what happened was, excuse me, I'm getting over my cold outside.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to grab some water or lozenges at any time, let me know and I'll just pause.
Oh, okay. Now I got a cup of coffee here because I didn't get up until a little bit late.
Okay.
And, well, it was woke up.
Oh, you...
But, anyway, what happened was, to justify what he did and to tell all the people of his rejection of the Magna Carta and actually the Bill of Human Rights that embodied it, he did more than uphold the totalitarian of the church. And what he did was he incited the actual words of Jesus Christ that verified in the two Gospels, so that it's possible. That was St. Luke, also known as Matthew. And the Vatican, the Pope, said it was on 35 and 36 chapters of Mark and Luke, Luke 5:27.
Ah, yes.
And he said, and he repeated St. Luke in one of the teachings in that. And it was, if you read them, it clearly reveals the antithesis of government and religion on these facts. All right? It shows how they screwed with everything and the people's minds. Because the people didn't know. They didn't read the Bible. They didn't have the Bible back in those days.
Let me just ask you to do this. We had, I didn't put, you know, the callback thing on. That's why you heard those two beeps. Did you cite some scriptures that might have been a little bit obscured by those beeps?
Oh, what he said?
Well, yeah, you said Matthew, and that's when the beep started.
Oh. Okay, it was Mark 2:14 and Luke 5:27.
All right.
All right. And in there, 34, 35, and 36, it says, "Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I come not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall they be, of his own household." That's Matthew 10, 34, 36.
Okay.
And it's repeated in Luke. So that just shows how if government was supposed to present and be the good and promote good being and everything for the people, it certainly isn't doing that now. It didn't do it then. And that's what he quoted those two chapters from the Bible of what the Lord said.
But that was a deliberate misuse.
Oh, yeah, it was deliberate, yeah.
A deliberate misuse of Scripture, because here we see in Christ speak in a metaphor, if you will.
Yeah, that's
to a certain extent, right. And then they run with it and apply it, which makes them look holy and righteous.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like the government today. You know, they're telling you, let's see, I'll read a little section right out of the book here. "An understanding of these facts enables one to better understand and evaluate the attitude of the religious leaders in the matter of the so-called civil rights of Negroes that are in reality gross civil wrongs in that they deny to whites the freedom of choice of associates and promote strife. It better enables one to understand the role of the clergy in inciting strife by this subversive activities." And that's exactly what they're doing, you know. Oh, well, you got to give up a lot of your freedoms today. In other words, to provide, preserve the freedom of the country, you know.
Yeah.
The freedom of those idiots down in Washington, D.C. and in the states. That's what they're talking about.
Well, I mean, even the whole idea of portraying themselves as something ecclesiastical is
right.
Also a scam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, to me, the Roman Catholic parishioners and their priests, I am not necessarily involving in this. But the Vatican itself, which has been at this for a millennium,
right,
has nothing to do with I would call Christianity. It has something to do with religion, but I would say it's a cult, and it's been a front.
Yeah, because it is a religion, because after all, the Lord never created a religion. People did.
Right.
And that's the problem. Now, what I do is I've got some letters here from the Pope Innocent to King John in 1213 to justify what he was doing. And it says, to him who from evil is able to bring forth good, we render thanks for having mercifully inspired you to make fitting reparation for the losses and wrongs inflicted upon the church. For you both have accepted the form of reparation which had been prepared after much consideration, and you have also put your person and territory under apostolic suzerainty. That's S-U-Z-E-R-A-I-N-E-Y,
right.
By right of lordship, making over in perpetual to the Holy Roman Church your kingdoms of England and Ireland, to be held through the church and of the church, subject to an annual payment of 700 marks for England and 300 marks for Ireland, as is more fully and explicitly contained in your legally framed charter. Now, you now hold your kingdoms by a more exalted and surer title than before, for the kingdom has become the royal priesthood, and the priesthood of kingdom of priest, as stated by Peter in the epistle and Moses in the law. Come then, exalted prince, fulfill the promise given and confirm the concessions offered, so that God Almighty may ever fulfill any righteous desire of yours and confirm any honorable purpose, enabling you to walk amid temporal blessings as not to fail of winning the eternal. Now that is from the Pope to King John. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's when he gave back and re-communicated the Pope, because they had excommunicated the Pope, the King.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, you can't get to heaven if you're excommunicated. So they played two ends, you know, and played it against him, and King John accepted it. He turned all of his citizenry and all of his holdings over to the Pope. The Pope then owned England and Ireland and all the people therein.
All right. Can I ask you a question?
The same thing happens all through history,
mm-hmm.
all the way down to, of course, any contract made in England with the people over here, like the Founding Fathers, when they did that, who's the main holder of that contract is the Pope.
Well, all right.
So they just slid right in, unbeknownst to them, that they were dealing with the Pope. They weren't dealing with the King.
Well, a couple of years ago, is this okay time to ask a question about this relationship? Or did you want to nail something down before?
No, that's okay.
Okay, thanks. A couple of years ago.
It's so much stuff that
I know.
You get a lot of this stuff on the ATG Press under... Freedom is Knowledge or Knowledge is Freedom by Jane Montgomery, and you can read some of these actual letters that he has dug out of the archives.
All right, also, now that you mentioned that, let's do this, too. Again, atgpress.com, folks, is where you can read what I-Man has posted there, and it's very extensive. James Montgomery's work is also up there. But also, there are three books that are very central to what you've spoken to me about and on other radio shows, which I don't think is available except by it being ordered. Those titles are, Which One Are You?
Right.
All right. Was it The Big Lie?
The Big Lie 3.
And The New History. The New History, okay.
Of America.
All right, now, there is ordering information on that page. It will instruct people what to send you, and it is through the mail that they will do that.
Right.
There's no PayPal, folks. There's no credit card stuff. Just read what the conditions are, and he's good to it as well as I know and others. So check them out, because if you want, you're going to need time to do this. There's no quick fix for this, because it is, I think, central to all our lives, those of us in the United States, and it is critical to my thinking. I mean, this answered the last question I had, and can I say I can sleep peacefully at night? Yeah. Doesn't make me feel much better about the future of this whole thing, but that's the way it is, and I wanted to know the truth. And this is why I sought out the I-Man. He did not ask me. I mean, it was on me that happened, and I think that makes a difference, because it's not like him to go out and peddle stuff and, You know, he's the real deal. Hence why he's on this show. All right, having said that now, a couple years ago, and did you want to add anything about as far as there are other pamphlets and such, aren't there? You would call them kind of like lesser book or chapbooks?
Yeah, there's some like 15-pager and a 7-pager and, you know, other ones that are not on there but are listed in the book section at the very bottom of the page.
Okay.
On ATG Press.
All right. Now, a couple of years ago, when I was maybe a third of the way into, you know, having gone down till I finally reached the bottom of the, if anybody does reach the bottom of the rabbit hole, I was talking to a good friend of mine, Pilot Pete, and I was saying to him out loud, you know, there's something about the relationship of the Vatican to Great Britain and then the United States. And he's like, well, how could that be? I mean, you know, didn't they kick the church, the Catholic Church out? And I'm like, yeah, what do you mean, behind Henry and that whole thing with Thomas More? I said, well, you know, maybe that was something that was more on face than it really was. I mean, because they come back with the Anglican Church, which to me is the same thing. So let me ask you, it seems to me, it's almost like when the New World was created, the New Atlantis, the United, you know, this what we know now as the United States, it was like somebody sicked Great Britain on us as being some kind of like custodian, you know, or parole officer, and we've been wagged by Great Britain, but I believe as an extension of doing the will of the Vatican. Now, do you know where, I mean, is that making enough sense that you can speak to that?
Yeah, I was trying to find something here while
okay.
You were saying.
Well, no, I mean, and the other thing that struck me, and he even admitted this later on when we were kicking things back through an email, you know the deal about King George drafting those ridiculous terms of the peace treaty?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where, you're supposed to have been the vanquished, and you're drafting the, and then what does he call himself?
The Archbishop of the Treasurer of the United States.
And the Elector of the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah, the Elector of the Holy, right.
Well,
if he's an elector, he's the voter for the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah, and I mean, there seems to be, at least among the monarchies in Europe, and I may be wrong, but there seems to be an especial relationship between the Vatican and Great Britain, and that may also be because the city of London is obviously located there.
Right.
And I think you have two big power brokers involved, and it just happens that one of them, you know, is in the nation state, the Vatican, and the other one's in the nation state, city of London.
Yeah, because remember, the city of London, which is the bankers, they front money for both sides of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Crusades, they fronted money to the Pope, and they fronted money to England, you know, to the king. So, you know, it's just like today, the banks control everything. Whoever is controls the money, like Rothschild said, you know, he could care less who rules the world. He wants to be the controller of the money so he can rule over those that control the world.
And, you know, there was a time, and I mean, Burke McCarty wrote about this back in around 28, when she had said that there was a time when the Rothschilds helped the Vatican. I mean, the Vatican's had its up and downs throughout the millennium.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a time, finally, when they got firmly ensconced, and also the Jesuit order. And that two-prong attack to this day is extremely potent. But there was a time that she cited that the Rothschilds had staked the Vatican a loan, but she said at this point in time, it is clearly the other way around when it comes to who's got the, you know, the most money.
Uh-huh.
I mean, do you agree with that? Or?
Well, yeah, in a way.
Okay.
Because everything funnels into the Vatican from, you know, South America, Asia, North America, and all the other countries through their givings, the so-called tithes of the people. But the bankers still got quite a bit of control.
Mm-hmm. Well, they call the Rothschild the Vatican bankers, so.
Right, right.
But would you say that there is, and if you don't feel that's the case, that's fine. But I just want to hear from you. Is there a perceivable and, I mean, obviously tangible, greater propinquity between the Vatican and Great Britain as opposed to the Vatican and France or Germany or...
Right.
You would say there is there not?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, it was a... France is like a... the Virgin Islands are to the United States, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or Puerto Rico, they got representatives, but they can't vote in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
They're still controlled by the United States.
Okay.
It's a territory.
Same
like France is, yeah, it's controlled by the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a country, but, you know, they do their own thing and stuff like that, but he still is in control of the outcome of France.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just using that as an example.
Right.
In other words, Puerto Rico can do what they want, and but they're still controlled by the United States, by Congress.
All right. Now, I know this is another whole thing. We went over this, you know, a year or so ago when we first started.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you just want to give it as cursory an explanation as possible. If we can do that, then those who are more interested can do a number of things, and one of them is obviously avail themselves of your books.
Uh-huh.
And you sent me something recently also, which, you know, kind of confirmed what you and Montgomery have been doing, and this person apparently came by it on his own means, and that is, there is a difference, isn't there, between the United States of America and the United States?
Basically, yeah. Yes and no, but it's hard to explain this.
I know.
The United States is a person, place, or thing. And it's a place within America, and it's a thing because it's Congress. It's another name for the United States is Congress Assembled. That's it. It's a corporation, and so when you say, and I've got cases here that goes back. I've got a book on IRS rulings and IRS cases. And in there, they'll give the citation in the heading United States, and then underneath they'll put United States of America in brackets when they're talking about the United States. So if you say United States of America, and this is where which one are you goes into definitions at the beginning of the book so people would know what you're talking about. The word of means belonging to. So when you put United States and then the word of, let's say it belonging to, and then America, it's telling you that there's a United States that belongs to America. That's all that means in English language. Therefore, America is the country. The United States is the place or thing within America, and that's why they use the word of. In other words, the state of Texas. Well, a state, yeah, it's that state that hovers above the landmass that is called a district.
All right, yeah.
And it belongs to Texas. In other words, over the landmass of Texas. It's a state, which is called this state, which you don't want to belong to, because then you're in contract and you become a part of that artificial entity. And, of course, the artificial entity is the word person, or the term is person, meaning an artificial entity. And it's very interesting that one of the fellas, a researcher, I sent him an email. And then I sent him the opinions for the Attorney General of California on a name change.
Right. So, mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I sent that to you or not.
You did. I read it. I got it right here. Uh-huh.
Now, he come back and he says to me, thanks for the opinions of the Attorney General. The kicker is the last paragraph, to wit, quote, given name or surname acquired through birth or prior assumption. And then, end quote. Assumption, presumption. How about that? So I wrote back to him. I says, "Yeah, that's it. It's all under the presumption, and it's whatever they presume you to be is who you are, unless you deny it." And so that's where that name change he picked up on that in the last part, And then he just emailed it to me yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you just said something, too, which goes back to what that other individual had written in that article entitled There Is No Constitution.
Right.
What you just stated started with the 13 original states, and with each state that was made, there was created, as you said, above the state of Texas, a
right.
district.
Yeah. That's what Washington did in 1791 when he kicked out the Constitution. It was still a contract. I mean, I don't want to belong to it either. But he kicked that out and formed districts over it, because when they instituted that bank, the first bank of the United States, which is naturally foreign controlled, they knew they were going to have trouble with the states, and they did, because Maryland wanted to tax the bank. And that's why Washington in 1791 created districts and put district courts in every one of the districts that he created, every one of the states.
So in the beginning of the United States, you actually had 14 districts.
Right.
One of them happening to be the District of Vices.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So then that's why the United States had to protect its interests. The Congress had to protect its interests when Hamilton, cajoled Washington into accepting and creating a bank, which the Constitution never prepared for. But another thing that another researcher wrote to me just yesterday said, you know, if people only read the Constitution, they would be horrified and shocked if they knew it was, you know, what it was. But she says, everybody says they read the Constitution, but they don't sit down and read it and take a whole day to digest what the words mean. It's technical.
Of course. I mean, doesn't it make you, like, with your insurance policy, not want you to read it?
Yeah, exactly. Same thing as an insurance policy.
Right, and the only reason it comes into severe importance is if you get into an accident, you know?
Yeah.
Other than that,
yeah.
It's like, oh, please spare me this stuff.
Right. Well, that's like Chuck Baldwin, who's a preacher on the Internet.
Yeah.
All right, he wrote an article, and he was speaking for the National Committee on the Constitutional Party in October 25th. And his opening was, Christians should support the constitutional
right.
government.
Right.
Well, I wrote back to him.
Yes, you did.
Oh, yeah. You got that, right?
You want Christians to support the corporate bylaws
right.
of a private corporation?
That's right. Why you want Christians to support the corporate bylaws of the private corporation, a.k.a. U.S. Constitution, is beyond belief. That document was deceived and deceived the American and so-called Christian, who is supposed to have no other gods before them. The U.S. is a god, and that god has its corporate bylaws, Constitution, to go by.
Mm-hmm.
I see you, too, are deceived, just as the Lord admonishes all of us that there will be false gods. A republic is a corporation, whether you know it or not, when you go back to the etymology of the word. Rome was a republic. Rome adopted the law of Hammurabi in becoming a republic. That law is the law of merchant's code. It's used in every country of the world. Even the Pope uses it.
Oh, yeah.
So you want the Christians to support a law merchant con job? Not for me, and never will. I revere that piece of trash as you do. I see you fell hook, line, and sinker for that corporate document and the corporations that devised it. One day too late, you will wake up. Do you really want their law or his law? You can't be a fence sitter as you are. He never responded to
No, he's not. He's another one like some of those cats on news with views or whatever. And they're the – I think they're not – those like those that right there and some of the shows on the networks – they continue to perpetrate this basic lie
right.
that Christians should get involved in,
uh-huh.
in things governmental, and that there really is a justification to try to help out Jehovah by killing people.
Right.
But, you know, two things. One, what stuck in my ear is when you said that Hamilton cajoled Washington. I don't think he went kicking and dragging into the night for the bank.
Oh, no.
No. No. And here's where I'm going with that. All the people on this side of the street, all the ones who get it, know that history, texts, you know, and books that want to perpetuate a certain urban legend.
Uh-huh.
It's all been spun. We know our textbooks have been spun. These people will tell you that. Well,
right.
Inside that also has always been, even in the secular world, in the world of grammar school and in middle school and high school, history
uh-huh.
textbooks, that this country, you know, it's like behind a backhand, but it's like this country was God-breathed, or now ordained, yes, only in the sense of God allowed it.
Right.
But there is nothing exceptional about this fictitious thing called the United States.
Right.
But we think that, so that, therefore, that enabled us to go off for the 20th century and, I mean, fight more than any other nation ever has, and still we hold the lead, we would call the league lead, in wars and combat.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, it's because, well, God is on our side, and it
right.
is a fallacy.
Oh, yeah, because you take any other country, and they say the same thing, God is on their side, they're doing right and everything, you know, that's why the Pope created that strife back in 1213 when he used those parts of the Bible. For the words, you know. I mean, it's for their own benefit. It's like a lot of people might preach, and you can read the Bible, and you can have five people read it and get five different interpretations. You know,
well,
I mean, it's what's in the person's mind and their beliefs that they were taught when they were brought up. And like Montgomery said, their core beliefs would be shattered, and they can't realize that their core beliefs are so ingrained in them that they cannot accept the truth when it's put before them.
Well, of late, and I've said this on a couple other shows, I won't belabor it anymore ad nauseum, but to say to you, what struck me as being really, I mean, dumbfounded was when people I've, exchanged correspondences with and such over the years, and even some of the show hosts, you know, who have spoken a certain way,
uh-huh.
all of a sudden, this Ron Paul thing comes up, and everything that they have been believing in, understanding correctly, about the ruse of government and what it really is, and it's of Satan because obviously he was given the kingdoms. What does that mean to you, folks? And when Christ says, this is not my world, are you making anything of this, folks? Okay. Ron Paul comes out, and I cannot believe the number of people who went from, yeah, this is it, this is our chance to, well, you know, maybe he is, and it's like, no, it's not maybe, it's not he is. It's like, forget it.
You're right.
You know, and then Jones gets behind it, who's supposed to be a Christian, and it's like, I'm looking at this Pied Piper, this Svengali type of situation, and I'm not believing my eyes or my ears. But when I saw that, I said to myself, "Who's kidding who here, man?
Right.
I mean, if you so easily can be taken because somebody has promoted himself as your leader, say Jones. I'm saying this,
right.
All right? And you're following what he's doing because it's Jones, or have you just chucked your, or maybe both? You've just chucked your common sense." And everything that you've known. And speaking
right.
about common sense, let me ask you about this, I-Man. This whole bit about the Founding Fathers, and they make them as, like, deific as possible, you know? But, I mean, what I was reading is, like, when they all assembled, the elites down in Philadelphia, right?
Right.
The people in the States, when they saw that the Articles of Confederation were going to get hurled, and they were going to get a constitution, that told them immediately, we're just going to slide back into monarchical rule.
Oh, yeah. Because a lot of people, if you get Storing's book on, Herbert Storing, the Anti-Federalist.
Okay.
He has all the papers in there from the Pennsylvanian and the Farmer and all these other books that were written by the people of that particular state. And they all knew what was going down, and the Farmer that was in Pennsylvania, writer, knew after the fact that they were supposed to attend the Philadelphia Convention. They never went. And they mentioned about the corporation and that it was a corporate structure because the Confederation was doing pretty good,
mm-hmm.
and that's why it was doing so good that they had to break it, and Washington and all those other signers, the 55 of them, were going to lose a lot of money if they didn't kowtow to the king and create this corporate structure called the Constitution, which was actually offshoot, or the United States then would become a child of the parent corporation, which was England, which was, you know, controlled by the Vatican and controlled. And he said the king had told them, look, you got land over here, you got a great holdings over here, which they did. And in fact, Benjamin Franklin had 43 different names, and some of them were women's names, and this coincides with that article that I sent you on the name change, that you could change it at will.
Wait a minute, Franklin himself took on 43 appellations?
Yeah, 43 different names he had, and he boasted about it, and he boasted that he liked to expatriate and go back to the mother country from time to time. It's in his own words, in his own writing.
Oh, he was another yeah, I know.
You know,
yeah.
And so that corporation, like if you read the Virginia debates in 1788 of Patrick Henry, he knew exactly what was going down.
Right, and I asked you a long time ago, why in the world did he cave? And what did you tell me? Because he at heart is a lawyer.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, he was a lawyer. He was from the Middle Temple, because everything west of Europe was all the lawyers came from the Middle Temple. The Inner Temples came and stayed within Europe and parts of India and like that.
Mm-hmm. Which is obviously the empire.
Yeah, that's the empire.
But isn't it true, though, too, when you look at the Revolutionary War, you find out that basically it was instigated by merchants and elites, fought by guess who? The little people, as usual. And the only right, and the only ones that came out of it with anything was that the merchants got a better deal, I guess, doing global trade. You know, with England not being in their way as much.
Right.
I mean, you know, so they struck a better deal. Okay, fine, we'll give you a little bit more of a vig, as you would call it up in the mafia.
Uh-huh.
And they were happy. So the merchants got a deal. But isn't this the nature of the world also, that one of the things that you should do is nation build? Because when you nation build, you got another market to do business with.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, because, but then remember what Washington says, we shouldn't get involved in the internal affairs of countries, foreign countries.
Okay.
It's good to deal with them on the business end,
right.
But we shouldn't get involved like the country is today, policing Cambodia and Vietnam and Iraq, and you got to have a democratic government and all this stuff, you know.
Well, you know, you look at what took place at the inception of the United States. You realize there was a great backlash against it that doesn't get recorded in normal history, let's say.
Yeah, because the people that win write their own history.
Yeah. Well, then you look at that event for what it is, and you know, Harry, my former partner, looked at me one day and he said, you know what, as we started getting into this, because he's the one that birthed the show back in 2002, he said, did you ever get the idea? He goes, that the United States being made 13 states with the District of Columbia, he goes, does that strike you as a microcosm, a mini try, a first experiment at World Federation?
Yeah.
And he's right.
Yeah.
All right, so then we look at that. Now, you go on, the United States goes on its merry way, and then all of a sudden we come to the time of the Civil War. And there was a further centralization of government, and I guess a bit more of a philosophical and governmental change, so that now you even got more of a expanded government that's going to be more malleable to what the Rosicrucians would call the old world.
Yeah, because you got to remember when the Civil War was created, it was actually to have more control in Washington, because remember, when the 14 southern states left the Union, and then they had to come back, they all had to be on equal footing according to the con job. All right? No one state could be above the other in anything. So what Lincoln did at that time was say, okay, we'll put them all on the equal footing. We'll make every state in the Union, including the original 13, them on the same footing, and we'll declare them the enemy also, and that is 12 Stat 319, which still exists today. So therefore, then, Washington had control of all the states rather than just the top tier of the northern states, because the bottom tier of the southern states would be at a disadvantage, which it couldn't be according to the Constitution. So that's why, instead of making them come back into the Union, they did it under the War Powers and created the atmosphere where every state would have to be declared either free or under their control, and that's why they put every state under the control and made the northern states just as much of an enemy as the southern states.
All right, now let me ask you this. Now, does that mean necessarily that puts Lincoln in what kind of light?
He was about one of the worst presidents. He was sort of like Washington was when Washington destroyed the original con job to bring in the bank and then create the district states so that the United States Congress assembled would have more control over all the states.
Now, I think we're in agreement that going back to the first one we can probably identify as a hit, going back to William Henry Harrison, it was quite clear that if presidents run their mouth or decide to go rogue or that they got their own plans, they wind up, you know, dead of a cold 30 days later. They wind up dead after eating cherries. All right, now, why whack Lincoln then if he's playing ball?
Okay. Lincoln, remember, was still a rogue. And he wasn't for the emancipation. He even said so himself in his writings.
Okay.
But it was the Jesuits that had to destroy the democracy, the republic, I'm sorry. And they're the ones that were sent over by the Vatican to get rid of them.
Well, you know, and that's just it, too, and very interesting. But one of the sites I recognize this for is lewrockwell.com. Where, by the way, is posted very proudly a letter that Ron Paul fired off to John Paul II, telling what a great humanitarian he was. But also, also, and you know, we were supposed to have a guy on by the name of Tom DiLorenzo, who was very critical of Lincoln. Now DiLorenzo is a professor at Loyola of Maryland. Okay.
Right.
Now the thing is, they continue to vilify Lincoln. And to me, I'm saying, well, you know, is it because you guys never really do give up even after the person's in the grave? I mean, you know, so what I'm saying is also, and I mean, I'm not trying to take you my way, but here's what I'm thinking. Both Kennedy and Lincoln seem, among the other very strange congruities.
Right.
Did Lincoln have some kind of change of heart? Did he just go, did he blink? And that made him very, very, shall I say, independable. Independent. Is that a possibility? In other words, they sent him over. If Lincoln was doing their bidding, that's fine. If they whack him, there had to be something in his character or something that he wasn't doing in order to have a target put on him. I mean, what do you think about that? Can you identify anything that might have showed that he, you know, like I said, he blinked?
Well, yeah, the Rothschilds were involved in the Civil War financing. And it was the international bankers. And the radicals and the ecclesiastical masterminds there had their motives, and it was exposed in the trial of the Jesuit-trained conspirator John Surratt.
Right.
And the problem was that it's a little hard to explain. Let me see if I can find something in here.
And let me just say this to the folks as well, if you're going to do some page thumbing there, and that is, it's very interesting that Surratt was spirited out through Quebec, which was a hotbed in Canada of Jesuitry. He winds up, obviously, Surratt does, in the Vatican Guard, the United States, now understand too, and I'm not saying this to you, I mean, but to the listenership, understand too that the United States threatened the Vatican with breaking off diplomatic relations if they didn't return Surratt. And they let Surratt escape. He finally got chased down in Alexandria, which is another interesting thing. And he gets brought back, and where are they going to hold a trial but in the Jesuit stronghold of Georgetown? And who becomes his confessor but the Jesuit out of Baltimore, Bernard Wiget? And what happens? It's a hung jury. He never swings for it. And interestingly, his memoirs have been destroyed. The claim is that he found no buyers for his memoirs, and so he just burnt them. I'm thinking probably he didn't burn them. I just don't think I don't think they wanted him to talk. But anyway, that's another thing. Did you find what you were looking for?
No, outside that they were still, the Jesuits were still the ringleaders.
Oh, yeah?
And the communists claimed the Civil War and Reconstruction area as their victory. They were fully confirmed the Reverend Yearling's charges that the party's international publishers put out a series of biographies and their member involved in participating in the Civil War and directing the Reconstruction. And that was one of the great biographies was Joseph Weidemeyer. He was a reputed ancestor of General Weidemeyer, who was a German communist military officer associated with Karl Marx in 1848 revolution in Germany. This is all over the
oh,
world,
yeah.
You know. It's not just strictly to the United States.
No. That's how they get everybody in tow. I mean, they run the same scam. Why should they change it? Because it works, and it has worked, and they're still not done.
That's right.
All right, did you want to associate a title with Weidemeyer's book?
Oh, let me see if I go back to find that. I just had it here. Weidemeyer, Joseph Weidemeyer. Let me see if there was a book on here that was publisher of the Tribune. Let me see if I can find that. It's 36928. There's so many things in this particular book.
And what are you reading from right now?
From the Federal Reserve Conspiracy in Rockefeller by Emanuel Josephson.
Right.
And if you got the book, it's on page 227.
All right, how do you spell, I would do this. Anybody who's really concerned about this can do a search. How would you spell Weidemeyer's name so they could do a name search or an author search and come up with the...
W-E-Y-D-E-M-E-Y-E-R.
All right. Now, you mentioned the Reconstruction Acts, and now that I've been living on this side of the Mason-Dixon line, as you well are, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, in time, you kind of get befriended by some of the natives.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed to me that they were more, that they if there's anything they harbor, and you'd be surprised, well, maybe you wouldn't be surprised, how there's a little something there in the landed families in the South. But, but it was like, it's like, okay, the Civil War. What about these Reconstruction Acts? I think that's what pisses them off more than anything else. It's like you let us be free, you told us we were brought back in, peaceable states, and then you put us under martial law again. I guess the idea, I mean, was to ram down the 13th and the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, that was because of the civil rights. That actually, the 13th and 14th, the 14th Amendment was the Civil Rights Act of 1868, and it didn't fly. It wouldn't go. So they created it and into a 14th Amendment. That's
there you
what they
go.
Did. And it wasn't the people that did it. You know, it was those in power that did it.
Another interesting thing I want to, run by you, and you've made me think of this because you were talking about, and this is neat. Maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe. You talked about Maryland being the one state that wanted to tax the bank.
Right.
Well, according to Dark Union, I always forget the author. I think it's Neff and Gutteridge. They were talking about one of the groups that was thinking about either killing or kidnapping Lincoln was some of the land barons in Maryland because the Union troops just beat up on them And to the point where they're like, man, if you do not call off the Federal Troops Office and treat us like we're, you know, we're Southerners, which of course they were,
right?
You know, we're going to have to do something. So isn't it interesting that the state that the federal jackboots kick into pants is Maryland, as if it's almost like, see, that's what you get for screwing with the bank.
That's right.
Also, yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're right on that, yeah.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it's so strange because, you know, I lived in Laurel, Maryland, and got to meet some people, and they say they're referred to as half-assed Southerners.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, there is some truth to that because they probably were more in line with the South than they were the North, considering that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were growing tobacco, they had plantations, they had slaves, and all of a sudden you're going to carve out of their territory on their side of the river this 10-square-mile thing called the District of Columbia. And, I mean, here's another reason why the Civil War was also scripted. How can you have a 10-mile-square area in the middle of hostile land? Maryland around you and Virginia beneath you, and you never get taken over?
Uh-huh.
I mean, even that first Battle of Bull Run, they could have gone into D.C. and destroyed it.
Oh, yeah.
But but that didn't happen. And then you got Meade with a gigantic army who never attacks. I mean, jeez, you know. And also in that book, Dark Union, the authors state, and they document it. They do a good job. I believe they're out of the U of Indiana, and that's another whole story. But they were talking about how Lincoln was allowing the war to come to a bit of an early conclusion because the beef for cotton guys had a raging business going, so that way at least the South could feed itself with northern beef by giving them the southern cotton, which wound up, guess where, in Britain.
Uh-huh.
Because Britain was getting PO'd that they had a deal with Indian cotton, which they did not like. And
right.
That's another thing, saying, guys, you know, if we don't get something going here with your cotton coming back here for manufacturing, we're coming over. So you had the businessmen wanting to keep that going. You had also, who else was involved in that? We had the Marylanders were two. You had the actual Confederates who wanted them was three. And his own party hated him.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in agreement with that? The radical Republicans didn't like him.
Right. Right.
So,
and because, like, the problem was the South, remember, was three times richer than what the northern states were.
Yeah, interesting.
Because of the shipping and everything, and the trades, and the Bank of France actually was in conflict with the mother bank in England, because it was that's why the King of Prussia said that, you know, if the war split up the country, he would declare war against the United States. And, of course, they were killed in 1917 because of that. They killed the whole family.
Right. Right.
It took them, from 1841, 1861, all the way up to 1917 before they effected their wrath against the people that messed them up during that war.
That's right. That's right. That was a payback without a doubt.
Yeah.
Also, you mentioned about France, and I just want to ask you this in passing. If the wars are scripted, which I believe they were, perhaps more as time went on, but with France's aid to the United States in the Revolution, was that like a continental little spit in your eye to Britain?
Yeah.
And that's why they got whacked, one of the reasons they got whacked with the French Revolution.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking about vengeance, is mine, say the Vatican.
If people only knew that... You know, this goes all the way back to the law of Hammurabi and law merchants. That's all it is. The whole country, the whole world has been run on the law of Hammurabi since, 2000 B.C.
I mean, with your coming on now, and sometimes I don't question it anymore, there is some kind of synchronicity that occurs at times, not a lot, but when it happens, it's a big aha. At least to me it is. And I get three emails. From yesterday to today, and one of them comes from my brother Larry, who reminded me of something you might have even seen, but certainly will remember. That do we remember whose photo Sinead O'Connor held to the camera in that obviously unscripted live moment on Saturday Night Live when she said, "Why don't you fight the real enemy?" Do you remember whose photo she held up?
No, I don't.
John Paul II.
Oh, okay.
Now, isn't that interesting? So anyway, I get an email sent to me to that effect. I also get one sent to me that I forwarded to you about the machinations of Pope Alex VI, some of the things that took place at that time, and also this famous photo commissioned by the Vatican by Alex VI, which shows so lovingly the mother Isis more or less imparting knowledge to Moses on her left and to Hermes on her right. And there, as I, you know, I've said to you, is the amalgamation of the occult with the supposed spiritual. And in the explanation of the painting, they equate Moses with representing the Kabbalah, which is a lie. It truly is, a lie from the pit of hell. I mean, because obviously the Mosaic Law, the five books, is what the rock bed of Jewry that was based on the Torah was about. And the Kabbalah is springs off the Talmud.
Okay.
I mean, that's my understanding of things. But the fact that the Vatican would commission an overtly, you know what I mean, paganistic weaving, you know, even the Visigoth doesn't like it either. But I mean, that they would commission something like that, but then you're looking at a place, you know, that has 13 obelisks, right? I mean, so what's up with that? Anyway, but you'll have a chance to look at that file. I sent it to you only early this morning.
It's a 6.9 meg, and it came over finally about 20 minutes ago. I got the dial-up, you know.
Yeah, and I did that. Now, the other thing, I mean, I was in a hurry, and I should have split it like I did with everyone else, so excuse me for that.
Okay.
But, I mean, this is something that's just not for today. I mean, this is something for you to peruse, and I believe you'll probably keep it in a file or something. Third thing is, in a little while, I'm going to have on another guest, man. His name is Michael Trudeau, who used to be with GCN and Midas. And he just told me that he had gone down. He's gotten into modern-day gold prospecting. So he went down to Indiana with a bunch of people who are prominent in this organization that more or less supports prospecting, and they all get arrested for a pan and gold in the Wabash.
Oh, yeah.
And he just told them, you know, he's going to tell the story in a little bit, but he talked about how strange it was, how this whole thing happened, and he'll break it down for us. And I said, Indiana? He goes, yeah. I'm going, well, that's an interesting place. I say that because, well, anyway, we had somebody on who goes by the name of the Protestant Separatist that talks about how occult Indiana has been laid out with the magic squares with regard to land parcels. Also, you know, their little loving, I guess, a salute to the occult in Indianapolis with your basic dome and obelisk. But I also get another email today, not from the Protestant Separatists, but somebody else who says, look at this stuff that's festooned all over Indiana in its public places, which is, you know, the Star of Ishtar. So anyway, what I'm saying is I get these three things in, you know, having been told by Trudeau yesterday of his fiasco down in India. Indiana, well, maybe I'm right, it is Indiana. And, of course, what I got about the Vatican and Sinead O'Connor, and we were going to talk today about, you know, the one thing that really just, I mean, to me, I'm not overstating it, says volumes about your experience and how you got the IRS called off you by the big dog over in Italy.
Right.
Holy man.
Yeah, that's, well, do you know that I had a friend of mine who fronted the money for my first book, lived in Indiana, and he sent me a document which Indiana admitted it's a corporation and every one of its citizens were corporate stockholders for Indiana.
Now, what benefit or detriment is that to the citizens?
That would make every one of them a taxpayer because they're a corporate stockholder of the corporation. And being Indiana's a corporation, like all the other states are corporations, and you become a member by association, that's where you fit the definition of person in 7701A of Title 26.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if there's any symbolism.
It says corporation, association, and everything. And if you look at that, it's like, where's man? Man's not in there. It's like, you know, a baseball. And you have a picture of, you're talking about baseball and the little kid, and you have pictures there, all plate. a bat, a ball, a catcher's mitt, and a football, and it says which one don't belong.
Okay, you're supposed to
circle. Well, you circle the football,
right.
But yet it's a ball game, ain't it?
Yeah.
So that's where you look at the definition in 7701A36, and it says person, corporation, individual, yada, yada, yada. And every one of them fits the definition of a corporate membership, the individual in the corporate membership.
Lastly, let me ask you this. I'll be honest with you. A lot of people talk about I tell you what, just give me one second here. All right, I will tell you that when I look at people who oppose the IRS and the income tax and such, most of them to me, and this may be unfounded, but they seem more like they're very brave with other people's lives and situations. And if you really think it's such a scam, and I believe it is, then instead of going there and hooting and hollering like somebody, like I say, you know, like people who egg on a jumper on a rooftop, why don't you go ahead and fight it? Why don't you go and put it up front where it belongs instead of just running your mouth?
Yeah.
Now, having said that, though, I mean, to me, I'll be honest with you, I-Man, I don't like my chances if I were to make a move like that.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm just saying, look, you know, Lord understands there's always going to be taxes, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, this is not the one I'm going to fight for and wind up in jail the rest of my life. Maybe something else, but not this one.
Yeah, you got to pick and choose what your priorities are. And that's why I tell a lot of people, you know, if you don't know the argument, don't get involved.
Well, they think they do.
Yeah, they think they do, but they really don't. Well, what it came down is why I did what I did. Was I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, well, everybody's looking at the informer stuff, and you know, everybody has doubts and everything, so I says to myself, I'm going to prove that either my stuff works or it don't. And if it don't work, I'll pull it off the Internet. Well, it worked, didn't it?
Well, do you ever...
I took everything that was written down on ATG Press, plus the three books that I mentioned that aren't on ATG Press. They were never to be put on the email. When I did that, I said, like I said to myself, you know, I got to prove to myself that it works or it don't work, that the premise is right, that the right argument is there, and I use the exact words, because you remember, it took me 2 years to write this, after I had done all the stuff.
Well, do you ever get anybody who goes a whole nine yards with what they've learned from you and your documentation and says, yeah, this is the outcome, this is what happened?
No, I don't think anybody's ever really done it, but... it's interesting that I did get an email from a guy last week, and he asked me that question, and I says, well, have you tried it? And he says, no, because I don't know how to respond to a simple letter that I got from them. And I says, okay. In other words, when I did this, I then got letters like you wouldn't believe from the IRS and all kinds of threats and whatnot, and even to go to court, and I held my ground, and I didn't cave in to their threats and fear and intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people do, and I've helped some people where they got started on the IMF and everything, and they got a letter response back, and they emailed me and said, I don't know how to respond to this. I said, well, if you don't know how to respond to that, do you know how to respond to something when it really gets critical?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just a one paragraph, and they couldn't respond because they weren't confident in themselves.
Right.
Because they didn't know the argument. I said, you got to know this stuff, like, better than your own history, your own life, and you know, I says, if you can't do that and someone out of the blue hits you with a question and you can't answer it,
all right,
forget about you. even trying to go in attacking the IRS and defending yourself.
Well, here we've got to say.
But the one man, just did bring me back, the one man said that this fellow, who was a doctor, was fighting the IRS, and he was doing very good on the name. Remember when I mentioned about the
right.
name and the changes?
Name
and
changes.
You can't have a last name of the taxpayer. He was doing perfect, and he was winning against the IRS, even in court, until they forced a lawyer on him, and at that moment, he lost.
Lost, right.
And I wrote back, and I said, of course, because he became a ward of the court and incompetent, and he hired the Middle Temple Jesuit lawyer that is out to destroy and keep the scam going.
Also, I don't know if you realized, I just got this email too, that a former IRS agent, a Sherry Jackson, was just found guilty of willfully failing to file.
Right.
And I mean, I'm sure they wanted to get her anyway.
Oh, yeah, they
yeah.
did.
But, you know, I look at the situation with Ed Brown and also Eddie Kahn, who's being remanded by the feds into a county correctional facility here in Florida. You know,
oh, they did bring him back?
Yeah, they got him back. They actually, well, you can understand this. I don't have to qualify it. The FBI goes down and kidnaps him. Boom, that's it. You,
right.
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 Right. No extradition. Boom, they grab him. You're gone. They bring him up, and they're playing a game with him. Wesley Snipes, I think, is out on bail, pending trial. I think
right.
Another tax preparer, whoever was involved in that, never did even go to jail. And
uh-huh.
he's out. And they're just not addressing some legal issues with Eddie. I think, obviously, telling him, you know, you ain't never going to see the sunshine.
Uh-huh.
Or it's going to take a long, long time. So he's fighting him on legal grounds, which seem to be respected. But it's all this time that it takes in between. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You file something, and you hear back in 3 months. Well, that's still 90 days. You know, you're in stir.
Right.
You know, so anyway, yeah, oh, yeah, he's back. And he's, like I said, he's up the line here in Gainesville.
Oh, okay.
And I speak to his wife every so often, and she sends out emails. Maybe I should direct a few to you, just let you see, you know, exactly what's...
Oh, she's the one that writes going to Panama?
Boy, she's got another newsletter out. That I think you probably haven't seen, but I'm sure if it's got to do with Panama, obviously, you know, it's probably she, because that's where he was, you know, scapped from.
Right.
But, you know, and I got some heat. We had somebody on that was critical of Ed Brown's background or whatever his character.
Uh-huh.
All right. That's another thing. My point was, how did anybody think this was going to end? I mean, it's almost like a suicide run. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And,
yeah.
And then you see all these people that go up and support him and are with him and you know, pumping their fists into the air. And it's the summertime in New Hampshire.
Uh-huh.
You know, so where were all the Sunshine Patriots, you know, when
right.
the cold came and they finally tricked him into letting in two agents, which I think is merciful in a sense,
mm-hmm.
unless, you know, but apparently a lot of people out there who were, like, supposedly behind the Browns feel a little cheated that it wasn't some kind of a Ruby Ridge. Yeah, you got
yeah.
it. You know, go and kiss my butt. You know, I'm so sick of it. So when
yeah, because I know Ed Brown said that he would win because the people would be behind him, and I kind of laughed and chuckled. And
yeah, good luck with that.
I says, yeah, just like Ruby Ridge and
right.
and all the other places. You know, it showed a lot of people there and the militia there, but the militia, they don't know the truth. So. And they all sit around and have a coffee shop and
yeah.
coffee klatch, and that's all they do. They don't get down to the blood and guts and gore and shooting.
No, they don't. And, you know, again, one of the things that's come across with this Ron Paul issue is now what I'm hearing, again, that I can't believe, about
uh-huh.
we'll take our country back. It's like you never had it to take it
never
back.
Never had it to begin with, right.
And then I went through, like, what country do you want? You want
right.
the country that just wins the revolution and then all of a sudden, what, within how many years, turns on its citizenry through the Shays Rebellion, and then
uh-huh.
we have a Whiskey Rebellion. Well, why did those folks get involved with that? Well, through what they considered was unfair taxation.
Uh-huh.
Oh, gee, didn't we fight the whole revolution for that?
That's right.
And they overlooked this stuff to believe in some Disneyland thing. And, man, I wish it were that way, I-Man, but it's not.
I know.
And they're living on this, and they're dangerous people because it's a house of cards. Oof. And I mean, I'm just preparing myself and my wife for whatever emotional eventuality this may all lead to during our lifetimes.
Right.
You know, and I'm not missing out, and I'm sure you feel the same way. You know, you go car racing and such. It's
uh-huh.
It's good to know what you know, but you come to a point where this is still your one and only life.
That's right.
You know, and I'm not going to, I don't mean waste it, but not all my life and energy is going to go into this situation because this is, you know, what's the old story? You know, if you live, what does it say? You only live once, but
that's
if you
right.
but if you work it right, once is enough.
That's right.
You know, so I mean, yes, yeah. Understand the truth, but man, you got to leave this, you know, this mortal coil yeah. with having appreciated some things, I guess I should say.
Well, the bottom line was my wife has always told me, and she stood by me all this time, you ain't going to win. I'm behind you, but you ain't going to win because you don't have the people behind you for support.
No.
They're way behind you, and they're waiting to see what you do, and then they jump on the bandwagon. And she says, there is no support like in the old days when people stuck together. She said, and it's right, you know, because... you know, everything she's saying is coming to fruition in just when I talk to people and, you know, they give you that blank, glazed look at, you know, what are you talking about? Constitution is not ours, and it certainly is ours and all this. I said, well, that's why you're sucked into being who you are.
Well, these people who have allowed themselves to be so easily flipped, to believing
yeah.
in something they know, I believe they have evinced they did not believe in, then that tells me just how much they're going to be able to stand like a rock in the winds that are going to blow.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, that's fine, but I tell you what, please do not be on my side, you know.
Right.
And I mean, I'm nothing but anybody who wanted to come to find the truth. And to be honest with you, I mean, since I'm not this way going to come again with you on air, I have to tell you, I mean, when we went through that, I realized, okay, this is what you came for. You
right.
found out about the world, you found out about history, and now you found out about your own country.
Right.
And that's the name of the game, that's the end of the movie, and now it's time to get out of the theater.
Yeah, just, I tell people, you know, just remember, you're dealing with a corporation,
mm-hmm.
whether it be a state or the United States.
That's right.
Nothing but a corporation, and it's actually become a RICO.
Yeah, it is. Oh, absolutely. The biggest one there is. You got it.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, and I tell you what, there was a time I laughed at Rollerball when they said corporations controlled everything. I'm not laughing anymore.
I know.
All right, man, thanks very much for all the time and stuff. We'll be in contact, obviously, via email.
Okay.
But thanks for coming out one last time. I really do appreciate it. And, you know, the rest we'll take care of in another manner.
Okay.
All right, God bless you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See you now.
Who wrote this next song? John Prine.
tears flow back like a broken down dam. Make me an angel, flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to. To believe in there's a living is just a hard way to go. Kitchen, I could hear them, they're buzzing, and I ain't done nothing since I woke up today.
How the hell can a person go to work in the morning, come home in the evening, and have nothing to say?
Thank you very much for letting me share this special evening with you.